Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahadiryam Karavamahai, Tejasvina Bhagitamastu Madhavishabhai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Pratibandhosti bhatiti, pratibandhosti bhatiti, vyavahararhavastini, vyavahararhavastini, tamirasya niruddhasya, tasyopadanam uchyate, pratibandha asti, Pratibandha asti bhati iti vyavahara arha astini. 113. Tam nirasya viruddhasya tasya upadanam uchyate. He's introducing here the term pratibandha. A lot of times this term, you'll hear this term coming up a lot. It's pratibandhika jnana, pratibandha or pratibandhika means the same thing. Pratibandhika jnanam means knowledge with obstructions. Mm-hmm. So pratibandha is just the word itself, it means an obstruction. And so he's now in this first verse, he's just introducing this term pratibandha. In terms of what is an obstruction, what is an obstruction to my knowledge, or what is the obstruction to, what is the obstruction to self-knowledge? And the obstruction to self-knowledge, as we'll see, is ajnana, right? But he's going to start defining this word pratibandha. So the initial obstruction to knowledge is ignorance, right? Even in Vyavahara, even in empirical reality, the obstruction to knowledge is ignorance. You can't really do something to get rid of the ignorance. You can put yourself into a position where your sense organs or your means of knowledge can remove the ignorance, right? But putting yourself into that position is secondary. That's not primary. You put yourself into a position, like for instance, getting self-knowledge. We put ourselves into a position to be in this class so that your means of knowledge can function in order to remove the ignorance. And then another example they use for that is, say, for instance, cooking. I have a pot, secondary. Water, secondary. Food in the water, secondary. I need to have, all of these things are required, but I need to have the fire to do the cooking. Right? So you can get everything ready, but without the fire, the cooking doesn't take place. That's the idea. So here, without jnanam, that ajnanam, which is responsible for self-ignorance, can't take place, no matter how much yoga you do, or how many. Swamiji will make fun of that, but not that he doesn't value yoga. What he really makes fun of and he doesn't value is macrobiotics. Oh, you just need all the sprouts that you want, it's not going to help. You use it as sprouts. You know, sprouts, you have brown rice and you can have sprouts. All the brown rice and sprouts is not going to help you. Any amount of yoga is not going to help you. Any amount of any type of activity is not going to help you as the primary, what is primarily necessary to gain the knowledge. All of these things, sprouts, etc., being vegan, all of these things, doing yoga, doing pranayama, having a healthy body, get plenty of sleep, all of these things, dharma, all of these things create the environment internally and externally in which knowledge can take place. But without the knowledge, then you just have a healthy body and you have some relative shanti of your mind you can have because of your dharmanishta, and you've done a lot of dana and a lot of giving and charities. You have a certain saintliness. You can have a tremendous amount of saintliness and goodwill and goodness. That doesn't mean you have jnana. That doesn't mean you have self-knowledge. It means that you've done your work within relative reality. You know, you have values, value of values, so that you have a healthy body, mind, and attitude toward the world, dharma, you know, dharmanishta, rooted in dharma, and that gives a saintliness, but saintliness is not, it says a saintliness gives a saintly person. A saintly person need not be jnani. Mm-hmm. You know? In fact, in the 60s, there were a lot of these charlatans coming over from India. Let's teach them something goofy, silly stuff. But at that time in the 60s, we didn't know anything, right? We didn't know what they were talking about, you know? And they would come and sit in a meditative pose with their eyes closed with so much calm and peace. They would have a calmness and a peacefulness and a shanti that I'd never really experienced before. But they were from India, and they were living kind of a sadhu life, and they had a meditative practice, and they knew how to do that, you know? And so we would all kind of be in awe of these great Mahatmas. They weren't great Mahatmas. Not at all. They were probably not even that saintly. But they knew how to, with pranayama and yoga and all of these things that really had not come to the States in such a widespread way, they were able to have a level of peacefulness that we didn't know. And so these simple things they could give to us, and we would experience, we would have an experience from those simple things. You know, even the repetition of a mantra. And then they'd be given a sacred mantra. My sacred mantra was just this one word. I had no idea what it meant at that time. It was secret. You know, it was a secret word.
Yeah.
You know, and I quietly repeating the secret word, but I had no idea really. And this guru never told me what it meant either. He said, "You just take this word and repeat. And I'd go in the bathroom and sit on the floor and repeat this word and repeat this word and repeat this word. You know. But that teacher had a shanti. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us in our training, that shanti, that peacefulness or that saintliness, kind of the walking on water type of saintliness, usually has some siddhis that go along with it because of Jesus walking on the water, mm-hmm. turning, you know, water into wine and these type of things. So we expect certain siddhis to go along with our idea of liberation and certain saintliness and calmness and quietude and giving and loving and caring and all of these things with a few siddhis thrown in. That was our idea of liberation and moksha. There's another of that. So just that, what I just said, that's a paribandhika. Mm-hmm. That's a paribandhika because it's a conclusion. Mm-hmm. It's a conclusion that I bring to this knowledge just because of my upbringing. So I bring these conclusions to this knowledge and they act as a filter. Mm-hmm. They act as a paribandhika. They act as a filter to the knowledge that is being taught. Mm-hmm. And so it is really up to the teacher to be aware of the paribandhikas, those filters of your time, the filters that are there of your era. And each one of those filters as a paribandhika, it has to be worked through because it's an obstruction to your knowledge. Say you've all gotten yourself here, you're seated, your sense organs are working, you're awake, you can hear the teaching is taking place, but the filters are all there. And so those filters, one by one, have to be very systematically removed. I would say by removal means exposing, bringing to consciousness this particular filter so that you can see it as a filter. Otherwise, it's just acting unconsciously. So when Swamiji was teaching, when we would go through these courses in India, it's not really a course, it's just sitting there with him for three and a half years. He was, what's the word? Relentless or ruthless? Mm-hmm. Ruthlessly exposed every conceivable filter that he could think of. Every type of concept, including what we thought to be, what we took as as being a jnani or a realized person, for instance. And he would bring all of these people very respectfully after he'd taught for a year and a half or so. He would bring each one of these people that were available to him, he would bring them to give a lecture. And the students would be there, and they'd listen to the unfoldment of this person that, for no particular reason, was famous in one way or another and held in high esteem. So he actually exposed firsthand. I don't know if he did this and how much he did it in your course. In our course, it was...
He didn't bring anybody in.
Yeah, for us, he brought like three or four people in, at least.
Of their flavor of belief, you mean?
Yeah, to give a lecture to give their teaching.
Then, okay, he would expose after they left?
No.
He wouldn't. They would expose themselves.
Yeah.
There was nothing
so people
had to
would
be
just
said.
Be like revolted or?
They'd be blown away.
Yeah.
It would be so shocking. Yeah. And then the people he couldn't bring in would be so shocking because the level of ignorance in reference to this particular means of knowledge, their level of ignorance was so much. It was the type of thing, so much of the teaching was this style. And all the students had already been exposed to the pramana over and over and over again. So then a teacher would come and would say something like, "You are wholeness, you are all fullness. Be peaceful. No unfoldment."
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it was, people thought Swamiji was really kind of harsh to do that, kind of cruel. But I don't see it that way at all. I just see it as reality. But it's hard. You know, he also deconstructed Gandhi, totally deconstructed Gandhi, because Gandhi had a lot of emotional problems, had a lot of issues, he had a lot of things going on there. We think Gandhi's a great saint. You know, so it's what we call a holy cow. He ripped Mother Teresa to shreds.
Yeah.
She's another holy cow in India. These people are all great, great saints, Gandhi and Mother Teresa and various people. Great, considered with great, great esteem. You can say, like, Gandhi was a great man and he was a saint, but it's different to say that he had self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or to say that Mother Teresa, of course, as a Hindu, he wouldn't accept her at all in any form.
Yeah.
He felt she was somebody that was really doing tremendous damage to the culture. But then there are a lot of issues about her also. You know? So you just, you know, rip it all apart. And then you would think, you know, how could he do that? How could he do it? Well, he could do it because it's a pratibandhika. And you have to be ready to see it. You can fight it all you want, but try it, but then are you willing to see it or not? You know? Are you willing to see it or not? You know? So here the pratibandhikas, what a pratibandhika does is it makes you see that something in a way that it isn't. That's what it does. It causes you to see something in a way that it isn't. So how he talks about it here. So that's what we mean by obstruction. You know, it obstructs your knowledge. So he says, a pratibandha, and he gives this other thing. I'll just give the words and then put it together as a sentence. So the pratibandha, the obstruction, asti, it is, bhati, it shines, iti. So the isness and the shining of something. Now, in English, we don't have this word bhati. Bhati means, now, this chair, for instance, is appearing to you. Right? Because there's light shining, there's light in the room, and so, yes, you're seeing it, but it's availing itself to you also. And so this chair is appearing. This chair appears. I appear. This necklace appears. This means bhati. From its own standpoint, it's the appearance is shining from its own standpoint. The other is true also. You're illumining it, but that's from your standpoint. This, the appearing, is from its standpoint. So in this world, in what we call Vyavahara, in empirical reality, everything is. Everything exists, and everything is known, right? So that's the bhati. This is known. So in Vyavahara, in empirical reality, all the things in Vyavahara that are capable of being and of shining. So see where it says here? It goes like this. Asti bhati iti Vyavahara arha vastuni. In all the vastus, a vastu, the word vastu means anything. Anything. This is a vastu, this is a vastu, any object is a vastu. So, there is a pratibandhika is towards a vastu, which is that arha means any vastu which has the capacity in Vyavahara of being and of shining. So anything in here that has any vastu that is arha means arhati, it has the capacity to be and to exist. We experience it that way in Vyavahara. So in reference to that, a pratibandha is called, something is called a pratibandha uchate, which which creates utpadana means jananam. It means it makes out of that, it creates for that something which is opposed to it, viruddhasya or nirasya, or negates it. It's opposed to it means something else is shining, right? Something else. This is known, but this is known not as a chair, but as something else. Like the rope is not known, the snake is known, right? Or it's not seen to exist at all. That's the nirasya. So a pratibandhika for something that is actually here. Now this is also interesting. If we take the word vyavahara, vyavahara means this empirical reality, this shared reality. Pratibhasika is the subjective reality, like dream or projection or things like that. So now what he's saying, in this vyavahara, this means us here, okay? That in the shared reality, here we all are. All of these things are existing, this body, this mind, the sense organs, it's all Ishvara. Body, mind, sense organs, you, me, rug, etc. All of these things are existing and available for my knowledge. They're all available for my knowledge. And I'm existing too. I am also present and I'm existing. So I'm also available for my knowledge. We don't think about it like that, but actually I am here. The subject is here, the object is here. See what I mean? We're all here. And subject is here, object is here. The pratibandha, or pratibandhika, is what causes, which allows me or creates a situation in which, say for myself, I could see that I am something other than what I am. That's viruddha. So though I am here, I take myself to be the body. Or I can even say, there is no I don't exist, there's nothing other than this body. So what is here available for knowledge, for existence and for knowledge, because of the obstruction, it causes me to take it viruddha, something that it's not, or to negate it altogether. Like an atheist, for instance, or somebody who says there's no life after death, or there is no, like a Buddhist can say something like there is no Atma. That's not fair to bring them in and something different. But nevertheless, people take it like that. They take it like, even though that's not really true, they're saying that people take it like that. That oh, there really is no Atma, there really is no self. There is nothing that survives the death of the body. Say like that, there's nothing that's nirasya. Or I can say that the self that I am is this body, that's viruddha. See what I mean? So I can have these types, in reference to my own self, is which what we're concerned with, I have this pratibandhika jnanam. The example he's using is of the choir boy, of this man who has a son, you know, which is the next verse. In terms of just vyavahara, in terms of the object, there are also pratibandhikas. Something that stops me from recognizing the existence of something that is there or taking it to be differently. That's a pratibandhika. It's something that obstructs my knowledge, either causes me to negate the existence of something or to take it in a way that it is not. So this is that word, pratibandha. It's going to come, becoming a lot. Swamiji uses it all the time. So that's his definition of pratibandha, and now he's going to give an example. Now there's two other words I want you to know. He's going to give the cause of the pratibandhika. Where's the cause of it? And he gives the cause for what we call the drishtanta. The drishtanta is the example that he just used. Drishtanta means example. So he's going to give the hetu, the cause, for the drishtanta. The drishtanta is this boy in the choir. So he's going to give the cause for the drishtanta, the hetu, and he's going to give the hetu for the darshtanta. The darshtanta is the thing that the example is for. Right? So here the darshtanta is myself, self-knowledge. The drishtanta is this boy's voice that can't be discerned from the group. Okay, so now he's going to give two examples of the cause for this pratibandhika. First using the drishtanta. So he goes, tasya hetu samana, tasya hetu samana. Oh, sorry. Tasya hetu, do you have samana or samana?
Samana.
Okay.
What number are we on?
What? Oh, we're on 14. Yes, samana. That's it. Just a minute. I'm sure. Okay. Tasya hetu samana, tasya hetu samana, abhihara. This is hard. We have to read the whole line. Tasya hetu samana, abhihara putra dvani shrutau. Tasya hetu samana, abhihara putra dvani shrutau. Sorry. I can't break it. Tasya hetu samana, samana, abhihara putra dvani shrutau. Tasya hetu samana, abhihara putra dvani shrutau. Iha nadir vidyaiva, iha nadir vidyaiva, vyamo haika nibandhanam, vyamo haika nibandhanam. Tasya hetuhu samana abhiharaha putra dvani shrutau. Iha anadihi avidya eva vyamoha eka nibandhanam. Hetu is another important word. Hetu means cause. Cause of something is the hetu. So now, tasya hetuhu, the cause of that, pratibandhasya tasya hetuhu, the cause of that pratibandha. So the cause of that means the cause of the pratibandha, of the obstruction. Putra dvani shrutau, regarding, lokana from shruti, regarding the hearing of the sound of the sun, the hearing of the voice of the sun who is chanting. So the cause of the pratibandhika in reference to the hearing, the shruti, of the dvani, the sound, of the chanting, the sound of the chanting of the putra, of the sun, is samana abhiharaha. Abhihara means mingling together, right? Of the same. Means all of these boys, they're all chanting the same thing, right? So samana means the same. So there's a mingling together of the same thing. All of these chanters are all there together, the sun's in the middle of them, they're all chanting exactly the same thing, in the same shruti, right? Same tone. And so when that's the case, all of these chanters that are mingled together are creating a pratibandhika for being able to distinguish the voice of the sun, or even to hear it at all, because it's totally blending in, it's totally mingled with all of the other sounds. So that becomes the pratibandhika. Because of that, I can't hear my boys. I can't hear my sons chanting, because all of these others are creating an obstruction for me to be able to single out the chanting. So that's his example. That's functioning as a pratibandhika. You know, you don't even know if he's chanting or not. You see his lips moving, but you can't hear a thing. Okay, can't distinguish it. So then he says, so that's the example for the drishtanta. Now the darshtanta is Iha. He goes, here, in what we're talking about, Iha means here. Anadihi avidya eva. Beginningless anadi. Mm-hmm. Beginningless. Adi means beginning. Anadi. Unnegates. Anadihi avidya. Beginningless ignorance alone. So anadihi avidya eva. Beginningless ignorance alone. Vya moha eka nibandhanam. Nibandhanam, it means cause. Another word for hetu. Nibandhana is cause. So the sole cause, eka nibandhana, eka means soul, one. The one cause, right, the one cause for the vya moha. Vya moha means ajnanam and the errors that the ajnanam produces. Because the ajnanam is there, because the ajnanam is there, there's all of these mistakes that are made. Right, so that's the. Avarna vikshepa, the avarna, maya. So we'll see this. It's coming up. Maya has two capacities. One is to cover, the other is to project. Both are there. Ajnanam has these two, right? So maya itself, from Ishwara standpoint, just projects. There's no avarna. But for the ones within the projection, there's not only vikshepa, the projecting, there's also the ajnanam. So we're subject to the avarna and the vikshepa. And so when they say vyamoha, the vyamoha is confusion, the confusion born of ignorance. So not knowing myself, remember this bana abane? Shining, it's appearing there, it has bonum, it's presenting itself, and it's not presenting itself. It's presenting itself, but there's pratibandhikas there that cause me to take what's being presented differently. What causes that is the ajnanam, which means myself is fully, wholly, completely present, it's not covered at all, but the mind is suffering from ignorance. The mind that has that very self as its own nature, as its own swarupa, from its own standpoint, it is not. It has no viveka between itself and its own being. And so that's the satyam mitya. And so the mind takes itself to be the conscious being, which it is, but it feels that the conscious being is dependent upon it. Mm-hmm. Right? And so then, whatever thoughts it's having, those thoughts I am having. Whatever moods it's having, those moods I am having. Whatever illnesses the body has, those illnesses I have. See what I mean? So that is the problem. The satya mitya has not been discerned. You have to say, in the aviveka, the lack of discrimination is between, first of all, satya mitya is not known, even what that is, and the aviveka is between satyam and mitya. There's not two real things here, right? There's a satyam-mitya relationship. That means the one, the mitya, is really nothing but the satyam. Mm-hmm. It's there is no separate mitya. It's like there's no separate pot for the clay, from the clay. There is really only clay. And here there's really only me. So I am...
So mithya is the form then of satyam.
We would say more like this. The clay doesn't really, from its just going to the clay pot for a minute, the clay doesn't even have a form. It's not part of its nature. Form, name and form is not part of its nature. I mean, in terms of this drishtanta. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to use, that's why we kind of go from clay pot to rope snake to dream. Right? So say if we go to dream to understand mitya, or go to imagination, that maya material that manifests as this universe, or manifests as, you know, name and form, manifestation of name and form, has no independent existence. So existence, when you think of existence, you don't think of form. I don't anyway. If I think just existence as a noun, as satyam, it's just being. It has no form. Now, the maya is nothing but a manifestation of a form, of color, of however you want to say it, of time, space, dimension, color, nama rupa. But this manifestation has no being. So the being of this manifestation is the Atma. But the Atma has no form at all. But it's the asti bhati. It's the isness and it's the consciousness, which this whole thing is enjoying in terms of, if we say, like when he says this, he uses two important words. The pratibandhika makes the isness, the asti, the isness and the knownness, you know, of something to be other than what it is. Either it's perceived differently or it's negated altogether. So now here, the isness is only perceived in reference to these things that are appearing in Vyavahara. This is. So these things are, but then because these things are, their isness is finite. It comes into being and goes out of being. Right? So that's a problem. And then also, all of these things are given knownness, bonum, as though they're shining of their own accord. They're appearing. This is known. But actually the knownness is Brahman. There is no knownness here. If I get rid of all of the nama rupa, all of the names and forms, the being, which is known, is all that there is. Is known being. Consciousness. Self-evident consciousness. And so that self-evident consciousness, as the very being, truth, like the clay of the pot, is the very being of what is here, everything that is manifest enjoys isness and is-knownness. But the isness and the is-knownness is the consciousness, is Brahman. This has no being whatsoever. That's why when you wake up from a dream or you have a daydream, imagination, nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. These nama-rupas are gone, but they weren't there in the first place in terms of any actual being or actual substance. What is actually there never changes in any way. That's why when we do like the meditation we did before this class, the more you can totally just relax, no resistance. You have no resistance, you just relax your body, relax your mind, allow whatever thoughts are there, whatever feelings are there, just allow them to be. You just total no clinging. You totally let go, you totally let the whole, all levels of experience, just for this time, just let them go and feel the body relaxing. As you do that, it becomes diffuse. The experience of the body mind becomes very diffuse. And your own being, the stability of your own being, comes much more to the forefront. And that's why this kind of deep relaxation is such a good meditation, because you actually lose the outlines of the body. It's like losing the outlines of the pot and just being the clay. You lose the outlines of the mind, the outlines of the body, because you've relaxed so much that your being is just left there as dominant, right? as totally dominant. Then you can see the mind, the buddhi, can recognize, have viveka, can distinguish between itself and just the being that you are. And it can cognize, it can recognize, you know, that there is no movement for you. You're not knowing anything, you know. You're not enjoying anything. The knownness and the enjoyment is totally self-contained in the very swarupa of your being. There's no duality in there. It's not like you're like space or something, but it's just that it's contained. Consciousness is consciousness. It's not consciousness of something. It's just simply consciousness. And being is being. Being is consciousness. Consciousness is being. It is its own contained, self-evident experience. And Maya is just like an incidental attribute of conscious being. From its own standpoint, because of the sattva, it is experienced, but not from the standpoint of consciousness. So yes, it is experienced because of the sattva, right? So the experience is there, but if you look and say, is consciousness, am I having this experience? You say, no. You from the standpoint of your mind are having the experience. From the standpoint of your body are having the experience. But are you having the experience? No. You're not doing anything. Your being is just whole and complete, and there's nothing away from it. You're the very satyam of all of this nitya. But there's no movement for you in any way. You say, well, you what? I'm not doing anything? I'm not enjoying anything? You are the very essence of all. You're the essence of all enjoyment. But there's no duality. You're the essence of all that is dear. Of all, you know. There's nothing more for you. These mitya enjoyments are nothing compared to your being. Your being is the very truth of them all. But it itself is not doing anything. That has to be recognized. It's here completely like this at all times, before knowledge, during knowledge, after knowledge. There's nothing new about this. Totally unrecognized. Totally unrecognized because of the pratibandhakas. You know, of the maya upadhi. Which brings about that because of which there is that ajnanam. That ajnanam which covers and projects. Right? If I'm here, this is the example we use for this. If I'm walking down a pathway and there's a rope along the pathway and I'm walking along and I don't see the rope, there is no problem. I don't see it. Right? So it's not going to create any mistake. Because it's just pure 100% ajnanam. You know? No problem. If I'm walking along and I see it without seeing it. That's the shining without recognition. That's what the verse came before. That bottom is there, but abhata. It's there, it's experienced, but not recognized for what it is. Then, the vikshepa, the projection comes. The avarana is there because I don't see the ropeness of the rope. I experience the rope, but I don't experience the ropeness of the rope. And then the vikshepa is there, the projection. It naturally comes, just like that. It could be a rope, it could be a snake, or a water streak, or a crack in the earth, or anything that could look like that. That's my situation here. I am here, fully here. The mind enjoys me fully, without any viveka, any way of knowing that the self, which is its very being, is free of it. It doesn't know that satya-mitya relationship. And so therefore, from the mind standpoint, I am the mind. And then the mind finds itself in this body, right? And so the mind is dependent on the body then, and there's this bouncing ball, you know, effect. And so the self is, in its own nature, even though it's shining fully as me, right, has now taken on all these attributes.
What attribute?
Has taken on all of these attributes, you know? So I become the mind body becomes full of the self, enjoys the self, and the self takes on all of these attributes. That's the pratibandhika, the only reason for that is ajnanam. And it's beginningless. There's no prior condition. What would the prior condition to ignorance be? There can't be a prior condition. It would be knowledge. And if it's knowledge, there's not going to be no ignorance. It's the only thing that there is like that. There's something that's beginningless but comes to an end.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Om Swasti Prajapyath Paripalyantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishah Gokramarebya Shubhamastu Nityam Lokasamasta Sukhino Pavantu Kali Parishatu Parijanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Barahitaha Ravanasantu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritam gamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vishishyate om shanti shanti shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om